The legislature of the state of Illinois passed a law saying that no state funds could be expended to pay the salaries of any person who would not sign a non-communist oath. You see what I'm getting to?
Yes.
And I saw an immediate loophole. I was pretty sure this was a loophole. I said, these aren't state funds, these are trust funds. The president says, Helena, now we have to treat them the same as their state funds. That is our responsibility. I said, well, I share your concern. I guess if that's the spirit of things, I will write to Pauline and see if he will sign the non-communist oath. So I wrote him a letter. I said, in fact, I got the file here now because I thought I might want to. I told him that during the summer the legislature has passed a law stipulating that state funds, and I didn't elaborate whether it was state appropriation or trust fund, I just said state funds, you'd have to, you'd be obliged to sign a communist oath, a non-communist oath. I'm sorry about this, knowing how you feel about matters of this kind, but I hope, of course, that you will find it possible to come and give us the lectures. Well, I didn't hear from Linus, and didn't hear from him. And I was a little leery about, pressing him on this matter. But it turned out that the Association of Graduate Schools, which is made up of deans of, now president, but it started out just for graduate schools, and then they extended it to Association of American Universities, and the presidents ran the American Universities part of it, and the graduate deans, the deans part of it. But the graduate deans had the responsibility for picking new members, and this was an elite organization, so to speak, and they were always at odds with the presidents who wanted more, but that's a sideline. Anyhow, the Association of Graduate Schools was having a meeting in L.A., and I think one day in Pasadena. So I wrote a letter to Linus and said that I expect you to be out in Pasadena on such and such time. I wonder if I could drop in and see you. I didn't say anything about the oath. Just, could I drop in and see him? Immediately got a letter back saying, be delighted to see you, Fred. Look forward to you at such and such times. Fine. So I get on, come to the meeting, go to Linus's office at the appointed hour. And enter the room. And let's say, hello, Fred. Hello, Linus. Well, almost before I could get seated, I might have still been standing up. I don't know. But I was surprised because I was expecting, kind of a lecture. He says, Fred, I decided I will sign. Geez, you could have knocked me over the feather. I sat down and we talked a little bit. He said, well, Fred, you understand. I'm not a citizen of the state of Illinois. I'm a citizen of the state of California. I feel that I cannot really protest what goes on in Illinois, but if I would not do this in California. Mm. That's what Linus said. And I said, well, Linus, I can appreciate your feelings. We will be delighted to have you. And so, Linus, I did not ask for him to hand me the slip right then and there. He voluntarily said, I will be sending you the form. So, in about a week or 10 days, I get the form in the mail, duly signed, notarized. And so we bring it to the business office, deposit it there, and instruct the public relations people through the appropriate channels to announce that Linus Pauling was going to give lectures at the University of Illinois. Everything was now in the works. He had fulfilled the requirements. Okay, the notice goes out. Immediately, the American Legion says, you mean you're going to have that communist come and give lectures at the University of Illinois? We said, look, he signed the non-communist oath. That doesn't mean anything. A communist will sign the oath because you can't trust him. Which reminded us of the arguments that went on when the debate was going on in the legislature. Some people said this oath won't mean anything because communists, if they're liars, will sign the oath anyhow. Oh, but it will protect us, said those who wanted to. Now that they got the protection, they said... At any rate, the American Legion objected, but it was on. The deal was on. I wrote a letter to Linus saying you may have heard indirectly about these objections, but don't worry about it. They protested the Girl Scouts because they had somebody who favored internationalism meet with them. I decided I'd let Linus know rather than to let him hear about it otherwise. So he came and gave the lectures, and they were very well received. In fact, the first lecture was was over their standing room only, and we didn't meet in a regular chemistry lecture room, but we went to a music hall. He got a tremendous crowd. Then he gave three lectures in the chemistry room where some students were sitting on the steps and so on. And then he gave another one in the music hall. This time everybody had seating. Then he gave one over in physics and a couple of others that are seating. Excuse me, I got to go to the bathroom. I'll be back in a minute. Well, at any rate, I was talking about Paul and giving these lectures, and they were well received, and that was very nice. And I think, considering how Linus has been involved in objecting to anything like that, how we got him.
That's a historic moment, I would think, to have him sign
it. Don't you think that was a remarkable thing? Though I was a little amazed at how Pauling handled it, really. At any rate...
What year was that?
Let's see here. Just a moment. Here we are. It was long about 1956.
56.
That we were talking. And I think, it was 56 or maybe it was early 57 that he gave the lecture, but it was back then. And, I cite this business about Pauling because it's an interesting, more than an anecdote about Pauling, but it also disclosed that the president, he was exceedingly sensitive to this. He kind of wished that Pauling hadn't shown up. In fact, there were occasions, social occasions, dinners, one thing or another. The president never was at any of them. He didn't want to be seen with. That's the kind of thing. Well, then another thing happened that relates to it, because in the course of my tenure as dean, it turned out that there was a graduate student in mechanical engineering by the name of Yellen, who refused to testify to the House Un-American Activities Committee, an offshoot of McCarthy period business, and was prosecuted and found guilty of something or other. I don't remember the precise detail. Anyhow, it related to this business of alleged communist activity and failure to testify. So how they got him or for precisely what I don't know. But at any rate, he appealed. But ultimately went to the Supreme Court at a time when the Supreme Court was under the Warren notion of things. And the Supreme Court threw out the business. Now, actually, while this was going on, before the Supreme Court, before the appeals, but he had been found judged guilty in a lower court. People said we had to throw him out of the university. We can't have communist university. And now he was a graduate student, and the business of graduate student affairs was the prerogative of the dean. Not that I was overly anxious to be a house mother, so to speak, to graduate students. Still, I resented what was going on when I had read in the newspapers that the administration was seriously thinking about throwing him out of school. And I made it clear that, look, if anybody's going to throw him out of school, I'm the one that throws him out of school. Not that I like to throw him out of school, but I didn't want somebody else to step in and say, hey, we don't want this guy around. Well, the heat got on, and about that same time, I was due to give a lecture out in California, actually, at Caltech, a lecture on some of my work. And, well, Caltech and UCLA in Berkeley. Yeah, I was going to give three lectures. And this had been scheduled, and it was coming at a time when this thing was reaching ahead. Well, I had two associate deans, one who handled generally student affairs, and the other handled research end of things. And I knew it was coming up. So I realized if I left town, the president would almost surely throw the guy out during my absence, or find some way of throw him out. And the question was how to do it, what to do. So what I did was to compromise in this sense. I suspended him. I didn't throw him out. I said he's in suspension pending investigation. Well, that took the immediate heat off, because the president couldn't say, well, you haven't done anything. He wasn't satisfied, but I hadn't done all he wanted, but I had done something. Of course, there was a lot of criticism of me for suspending him. You know, the people who were liberally minded said, what do you do that for? Stand up for his rights. And others say, well, at least it was a step in the right direction, see, and so on. And so he was suspended. And while I was gone, the associate dean appointed a committee, since there was a outcry from a lot of people, appointed a committee to investigate or make recommendations as to the disposition of the case. I don't remember the membership of the committee except for the one person, one of the members of the committee. It's a small committee, not more than five, maybe it was three people. One of them was John Bardeen, highly distinguished. I don't need to say he was at the University of Illinois, and he was on this committee. And the committee recommended that he be reinstated in the light of these things. This happened while I was on the trip. And, well, no, they didn't come up with the recommendation while I was on the trip. When I had returned, they gave the recommendation. And I accepted the recommendation. I talked to the then provost, and vice president was Gordon Ray, who subsequently went to the Guggenheim Foundation, you know. He says, you're going to accept their recommendation? I said, yes. He says, well, okay, Fred, you know, the president isn't going to like this. And I said, well, that's a recommendation of the faculty committee. I concur with this recommendation, and we'll reinstate him. So we reinstated him. I did not come out looking very good to the liberal element. They said I was wishy-washy. All I can say, and I wrote almost a chapter of a book or an article on the Elm affair, because there's lots of details. He wouldn't have had a chance of a snowball in hell while I was gone, really, because I knew enough about how the university functioned. So I put him, you might say, in protective custody. That's what it really amounted to. Well, he continued his appeal. And his appeal was sustained by the Supreme Court. And that really did the whole thing. Subsequently, I talked with him. Well, he was grateful for the fact that I had reinstated him. I'm not sure he was pleased that I had ever suspended him. But I told him what I went on. And he kind of wondered about what really did go on in University City. And, however, all of this was contributing to dissatisfaction by the president with me. And then one year, following the start of an inflationary period, there was a general university budget increase with salary increases. And practically everybody got a salary increase. President got a salary increase, the vice presidents, faculty in general. And it turned out that I was the only dean, director, associate dean, or associate director that didn't get a salary increase. And I went to the president, and I said, look, I don't like to talk about the salary, but to really, in the view of the generality of all this, and in view of the fact that, in the past year, not only have I conducted the affairs of the office, I think, satisfactorily, but I was elected to the National Academy of Sciences. I was made president of the Association of Graduate Schools by my graduate dean peers. And I was singled out as the only one. He said, well, you understand, Fred, you're the highest paid dean. I couldn't raise you anymore. And I just left. And then I said to myself, well, the message is clear. I mean, that's a pretty damn stupid way of doing it. You know, and you put you on the spot because you almost have to sound as if you're thinking only of money. But when it was just absolutely clear, this big push, and you single out one fella, what does it mean? An administrative position, see? Well, now, then I had heard about jobs. I had been offered a number of jobs while I was dean from various places. I had been approached about a couple of minor university presidencies, but they weren't very good jobs, to be perfectly honest. And I would thank people for considering me, but well, when you come right down to it, I'm persuaded now that I was never cut out to be a university president anyhow, though if I had been offered a real good one, I might have accepted. But it wouldn't have been good for me because I'm lousy at public relations and things like that. And I'm terrible when it comes to money raising. And you couldn't have convinced me in my younger days that I couldn't do it because I was, you know, really gung-ho on things. But when I look back, I think I'd have been a dismal failure as a college president. I could be a second in command. I could be a dean. But to hobnob with people to give you money had been a washout, absolutely. I think I can honestly be critical of myself on that score. Well, I had been, I had a couple of offers right at that time, but I had a hankering to go out to California. And I did get this job offer from Santa Barbara. Santa Barbara would not have been my first choice. I had heard about Loy Hoy getting started, to see. And, of course, I'd have preferred Berkeley if they had been willing to take me, but no offer was forthcoming from Berkeley. But I thought, okay, Santa Barbara is on the make. University California is growing. There's a future, you know, that sort of thing. So I did go to Santa Barbara. And there I was in chemistry, and I was then also made vice chancellor for research. Cheadle wanted me to stay there, but by then I had made contact with La Jolla, And I felt kind of guilty about leaving Santa Barbara that soon, but I did come down here where I felt the potential was greater. And I was made Vice Chancellor of Graduate Studies and Research. But then I learned something that I would never have anticipated. At Illinois, I was successful as a dean in the eyes of the faculty and in my peers, notwithstanding the president, but I mean, I was successful as a dean. They thought I had done a good job. I said, well, if I could do it there, I could do it here. But I overlooked one thing. I had grown up in Illinois. The people knew me. They trusted me. I wasn't out to skin them. And here, everybody assumed the administration's out to screw anybody. That was the attitude. You could not really be an administrator, be trusted by people coming in from all over the country. They were a darn good bunch here. Let's face it, they weren't intellectual ragamuffins. Quite the contrary. They were top-notch people who were dissatisfied where they were, distrustful of whatever establishments they came from, distrustful of whoever was in charge of the establishment here. And it was very much harder to really carry on a sound administrative program because everybody wanted to be his own boss and probably had the credentials. That was UCSD at the start. And that may be a little insight you might be interested in. I observed it. And so what was a rather glorious period at Illinois, except for the relationship to the top, was not as pleasant here. Because now the situation was reversed. Mm-hmm. The chancellor thought I was a nice guy, see? The faculty, I had to persuade I wasn't out to beat him. Mm-hmm. And this is a... It was a real turnabout. And, incidentally... I told you about Linus Pauling and Illinois. Let me tell you another thing. Linus got into my life several times. When I got to indicate I was going to Santa Barbara, Pauling was fed up with... Pauling had just moved, or was going to move, I should say, going to move to Santa Barbara to be in Hutchins Institute for... What was it? Institute for... Not the Americas, or no, it wasn't that. Hutchins had an institute, and I forgot the precise name for advanced study of international affairs or what have you. And Pauling was going there. Pauling had his outs with the people at Caltech. You know, he had his problems about the same things that I cited before. His political thoughts were cutting down on the amount of money the school could get, and President DuBridge of Caltech, mindful of Pauling's preeminence as a scientist, was still distressed that it was making it harder for him to raise money and so on. Pauling got kind of fed up, and so he was going to Maynard Hutchins Institute. But he heard I was going out there, and he wanted to know if... he might not have an adjunct appointment, see. You know, have a student or two and so on, and have just a nominal appointment. I said, that'd be great. I said, this is wonderful. That's going to be my first big victory when I move to the new location. We start off with a bang. We're going to have a distinguished person associated with it. And yes, sir, I saw great things. And I was not yet... appointed. I mean, I had the promise, but I mean, I wasn't yet on the faculty, so all I could do was to make a recommendation. I could not initiate papers or anything like that. But I wrote here, said that Professor Pauling would like to have a nominal appointment so that he could have perhaps graduate students work with him in the university, and so on, while he's working at Hutchins Institute. So I think this would be a fine idea, and I hope that steps will be taken to make the do the things we gathered up, the necessary information that would be required, you know. Evidently, what happened was that before sending any papers officially through, the Chancellor was asked about it. I guess I had indicated to the Chancellor that this recommendation would be coming through. And the Chancellor immediately went to the President, Carl Kerr, who I think, by and large, is a very liberally oriented individual. I wouldn't personally be against Linus Pauling, but he was mindful of how the regents would behave. And there were a couple of regents who alleged, at least one allegedly said, over my dead body, we're not going to have Linus associated with this University of California in any way, shape, or form. So, the Chancellor says it can't be done, and I don't remember now, I'd have to read everything, whether I told Linus that evidently there had been an inquiry made and there was some problem with the regents, but at any rate, he got in touch with the Chancellor then. And he had a pretty rough affair with the Chancellor. The Chancellor didn't want to talk to him, and Linus wasn't going to talk to him. They did it by telephone and perhaps by letter. But the upshot was that Linus was pretty sore, and for a while I thought he was sore at me because he thought I was supposed to send through forms, and I told him, look, I couldn't send through any forms. I was not even officially on the staff. I could make a recommendation. Other people had to send in the forms, and I certainly did make the inquiry, and he forgave me. But he was a little miffed, you know, and he says, subsequently when I saw him, he says, well, Fred, I don't hold this against you, but I will hold it against Santa Barbara, and I'm never going to set foot on that campus. Yeah. That's what he told me. Well, sometime later, students, a student body organization, went probably to give a speech to them. And the way I heard about it, they came to me and says, you know them, don't you? I said, I do. Well, will you introduce them? I said, sure, I'll be glad to give him an introduction. So, sure enough, on the appointed day, Linus goes to the appropriate place, and I go there, and I introduced him, and it was very nice, and there was talk afterwards, and all the students asked questions. He gave he's a wonderful speaker, you know, and even when he gets excited, and the students started asking questions, finally, I had to even to call it off. I said, sorry, you know, we really do have to bring this to a close, you know. But, you know, the students would come up afterwards, go and talk to them, but I finally relieved them of that. And then, when I talked with Linus a little briefly afterwards, said, that was a very fine lecture, we're glad you were able to come. He remembered what he had said to me. He says, you know, Fred, I told you I was never going to set foot on this campus. What I meant was, I wasn't going to come if the administration had anything to do with it and asked me, but these were students. So, I remember, I'm not a citizen of Illinois. I wouldn't do it in California. I'm not going to set foot, but these were students. Don't get me wrong, but these are anecdotes that still give a little bit of...
They're very important.
And I don't know who else could tell, because I had, and I have one more Linus Pauling story coming up, and this is going to be more about Pauling than me, but we're through, but at any rate, he did. The time when he seemingly put me down as one of the failures was subsequent to that time. I was already down in La Jolla, and I had, was asked to introduce him when he was going to give a talk in connection with the dedication. And I introduced him, and then Pauling said Fred was one of our failures, and I told you that story before. But you understand, by this time, I really didn't question Linus, but I was set back at that moment. Well, what's the final...